So, RID stands for reactive ion dissolution. In your septic tank, it's starting anaerobic. We heard that earlier in one of the talks. Well, if you introduce iron or aluminum in the septic tank, you could probably bind or combine the phosphorus, and then you'd need some way to get it out. And some of these technologies, the RID system right here, what it does is it binds your phosphorus with iron, iron filings, the old boat you threw away, you could do everything, and then it will precipitate the iron out into your sacrificial leach field. Well, who wants to do that? Because it could clog your leach field. So they make a little filter after it with sand in it and supply oxygen to it, and the phosphorus will precipitate out, and then you can harvest that later on. You can dig it out and reuse it, use it as a soil amendment, and maybe you'll get some of the phosphorus back. This technology, there are a couple of them out in Nantucket, Rhode Island off the coast of Massachusetts, and they're extremely effective at removing phosphorus. I mean, 99.9% phosphorus removal. But the systems themselves are rather large and cumbersome, and some people call it fairly expensive. There's another technology. This one introduces an iron plate or a series of iron plates into your septic tank, runs a small current through it. That small current frees up the iron as ferrous iron, Fe2, combines with phosphorus, goes out of your septic tank to your leach field, and precipitates out into strychnine or another mineral in a very fine portion that we have found has not clogged your leach field. But it does go out there, and eventually it will. But over the 5 years of the study that we didn't see that. So this is sort of electrochemical precipitation of phosphorus, but in a very unobtrusive way in some ways, because you could retrofit a standard septic tank with something like this. Called Waterloo ECP, it's got a pilot approval in the Commonwealth. So, technology is abiotic. In other words, bugs are not doing the work. It's pretty chemical, 0.5 kilowatt hours per day per resident, largely independent of water characteristics, has no sludge or reactive medium issues, and has no adverse effect on pH. Over 2 years, we tested it, and it, you know, we haven't installed any in the field until the spring of 2019. This spring, we will be testing one at somebody's house. So the bottom line here is it's a pretty experimental system. It has undergone some testing at our test center. I run a test center for all major manufacturers, alternative septic systems, and tested at our site. And this system was tested with us for 4 or 5 years. So those are approved. There's also ways to encourage natural processes. As I said, if you want the best treatment for wastewater and you have the room, the soil is the best place to do it. The soil has minerals in it that combine the phosphorus, bind it, keeping it up and available to some plants so that they can recycle it as you cut your lawn or as you harvest the plants on top of it. And for a long while, could immobilize the phosphorus from moving into where you don't want it, which is into the ponds. There are a number of ways to figure out whether you have soils that will bind phosphorus. There's some tests that can be performed. But in general, fine textured material with a lot of minerals in it can generally bind phosphorus very well, keep it from migrating, and keep it up into that layer where you can see it as a nice green lawn. So, what is the soil doing? If you can remember this by the end, you will definitely get the prize, but in general, those two top layers, your A and your B horizons, rather than stripping it out and bringing in sand, those natural layers are what can help you bind phosphorus, and probably the best way to do it, for instance, for a seasonal use home, you might get 30, 40 years worth of binding capability. Now what you do after that? No, no, because eventually that phosphorus will do some migration to where you probably don't want it. So, the advantages of soils-based phosphorus removal, it's passive, you're not spending any energy, unless of course you're using pressure dosing. Which, by the way, I see most people very averse to pumped systems. How many people just, you know, you hear pump system, and you hear me say blah, 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 blah. How many? Come on. Yeah, you like what other things do. Because most people don't like it because they say, oh, it's something to go wrong. One thing to go wrong, what happens if the pump breaks, whatever. But think about this, folks. You have a pump in your refrigerator. You drove here today with a little pump pumping that gasoline into those cylinders. All you have to do is maintain it. And will that little pump last forever? No, that won't last forever. Neither will your refrigerator that's pumping that refrigerant around last forever. I just want to say you gotta get over it. Because pump systems, no kidding, pump dose systems, and then you add timing to that, you have got huge, I'm saying huge, you're gonna say, no, huge! You have got huge benefits of treatment by pumping to your leach field. Why? Because all the action, everything happens on the soil surfaces. And when you start dropping water into a distribution box and sending it out to a soil-based system, you're not even using a third or an eighth or a tenth or a twentieth of all the soil that you have paid a lot of money to design into. If you did, you'd get much better treatment. You'd say, well, what will that do? Well, it would make you feel better, no, you wouldn't. I mean, yeah, okay. So you wouldn't see it on your electric bill, by the way. Because normally that pump will kick on. I mean, we have systems where we passively remove nitrogen. Those pumps kick on for 2 minutes and they run 4 times a day. So 8 minutes on that pump. I would defy you to find that on your electric bill. Unless you meter it somewhere. And then you wouldn't be paying for it because it would probably be like maybe $3 a year. Okay, disadvantage to soil space has a finite capacity. Most soils in leach fields will only have a finite capacity to hold that phosphorus. And if you can recycle it back up, that's great. You're going to see green lawn or shallow rooted plants that you like, flowers that you like, things like that. But eventually it's going to pass through and pass it downstream. So that's the biggest disadvantage. Now there are some creative things you can do here if you're really into it. Like my wife says, you're too far into it, Jeff. I get the Jeff. Not much, Jeff. But anyhow, so if you don't do leach field, for instance, we all know that iron will bind phosphorus. I'm just saying, you know, I'm not rich, I'm not saying this because it's not legal, but if you, for instance, rototilled into your sand iron filings, like something like that, that would bind phosphorus. And then a couple of years later, you could go out and harvest that stuff and use it as a soil amendment. That would be illegal, so you shouldn't do that. Okay, so. Shallow soil-based systems that integrate wastewater disposal and treatment by optimizing natural processes are awfully good at attenuating phosphorus. You will see that one to the right. That's a shallow distribution system called GeoMat. It's just a shallow, narrow drain field equivalent. And if you'll see to the left, you can see that out there on the Kirkwright thing. You can grow some serious lawn here. Now, you know, and this starts a whole new paradigm. Because if you, how many like lawns? Raise your hand. Yeah, okay, 1, 2, 3, maybe a dozen. Think about this. You know, somebody complains, hey, your lawn's a little ready. Have a party, second door left, flush twice. Boom! All of a sudden they come back here, well, I'll be good in a couple weeks. Not suggesting that, just saying it, you know, just saying it. Okay, technology's not approved yet in the Commonwealth. There is one that follows a treatment unit, like you saw today, you saw a septic tank. This would follow that and has an adsorptive medium, and it's from Noeco. I don't know whether they're approved in the state, but we have not approved them yet, but we're about to test them. It uses gravity dispersal over an adsorptive medium. And all you really need to do to buy the phosphorus is find something that will bind the charge and hold it. But eventually it's not going to be able to hold it. It's going to be that little juggler on the walls go by. So you'll have to change that media out. They have had some very good results through B&Q, which is Bureau of Normalization de Quebec. Thank you. I always struggle with those, throwing those words together. NSF is so much easier, National Sanitation Foundation. But they have got very good levels in the tests from there and from NSF. And this technology is also featured here. And I can certainly be corrected if I'm wrong, but generally the principle is aluminum freed up by a small current running through aluminum plates will bind with the phosphorus, then drop out in the septic tank. So you will have some sludge production you have to get rid of. We haven't seen these in our area, but we're about to, by the generosity of this company, do a couple of installations in the town of Brewster on Cape Cod, which is starting to regulate phosphorus. I know it's run through your mind now. No, I don't really, but I'll guess. You're saying, why aren't there more technologies that can do this simpler? And the truth is, there's no regulation. See, regulation drives the market. If there's a big regulation out there, if you build that regulation, they will come. You'll have technology starting to think about phosphorus removal. These companies are ahead of the curve. This one, Premier Tech, and one of the both Canadian companies, is there any common element in there? They're both Canadian. And they have decided that phosphorus in their ponds, because it can encourage not only algae growth, but cyanobacteria growth, and in general decreases diversity in the pond. Screw a pond up. Who wants a screwed up pond? Anybody here? No, I didn't think so. Okay, so again, what this does, in these slides that are courtesy of them, phosphorus is removed by allowing it to react with the aluminum-free cation, which precipitates in the form of aluminum pot. What's aluminum pot? No, PO4. Excuse me. I get nervous talking to people, so I have to do that. I'm sorry, you guys have such bad jokes. You didn't pay anymore for it. Okay, so this is essentially what happens here. Besides, it's after lunch. Very good removal. You can see some of the removal. This is their literature, it is not ours, but it's certainly believable, it's conceivable given the process, which is pretty well known, because back in 1995, there was a guy, I forget his name now, it's four letters, I'll blurt it out probably in the middle of the night tonight, but he said, all you have to do is add an alum to your septic tank and it'll settle up. Well, you know, that evolved into systems out there where they said, okay, if you put in too much alum, what happens? Well, it gets wasted. Because when we're off about it, it's off the bottom, and that's it. So then they said, what if we bleed it in very, very slowly? Well, okay, but if they go on vacation, it's still bleeding in there, and just wasting that alum. So this company, very wisely, comes up with this idea. Why don't we create the aluminum and the same proportion of the flow coming in? I mean, you know, why bring this stuff to the party if nobody's going to be there? Possibly poop coating in a septic tank is a poor metaphor using party. I'll use it. So the stuff's coming in a septic tank is met by the aluminum because it's, you know, it's created by this car, which is a sensor that says, hey, there's water running in the house, and this happens. So it's a pretty good technology. We're going to be looking at it to see two things. One, does it work? Because Einstein said everything should be as simple as possible, but not simple. And so we're going to see whether it works and also what the aluminum concentration of the sludge becomes. Because that's kind of important when you try to get rid of that insert treatment plant. It's always working. So lifespan of the left roads is that many hours according to the literature with under those particular uses. But again, you see that these could be very simple retrofits if you had designed your system, or if the design of your system falls into certain categories where you have the adequate drop, you could actually do it just, you know, passively. Okay. Finally, the elephant in the room, I gotta say it because I gotta tell you the truth. What's the easiest way to phosphorus? Don't put it in there in the first place. So, composting toilets. How many have an immediate, knee-jerk, I'll cuss in my house when I say that. Thank you very much. Finally, an honest person in the house, two honest people in the house, because the rest of you probably still pee in the shower and other things too. So, composting toilets are not your old composting toilets. They are different, they are more sanitary, and they are not objectionable. We see them coming in on Cape Cod in very high-end houses. And as nice as those houses I saw on those slides right by the lake, they pale to some of the high-end houses I've seen in old captain's houses. By the way, you know the captains of these, the captains of large ships, they were smarter. They never lived on the water. They moved back from the water. They understood what the water could do. Right. Anyhow, if you're considering a lakeside community that has to deal with phosphorus, consider this, because we did a study of this. 90% load reduction, phosphorus and nitrogen. And by the way, pathogens. Because all your pathogens are going into that and subject to a composting process. Now it's not thermophilic, which means it doesn't get up to temperature, they'll kill the bugs. But then again, they're not dumping that stuff in the lake. Or at least I'm telling you, you should not dump that stuff in the lake. I thought that was probably obvious, so I should have skipped it, sorry. Okay. The one thing you should know, though, before you do anything around your lake communities or anything, I know pathogens are a huge issue. We heard that this morning. And they're fairly easy to get rid of. The right loading on the right soils, over the right areas, like drip dispersals and shallow distribution, very wide spread out. Timed pump dose, please. If you remember nothing else, you said, we had timed pump dose. That's what you should remember. Timed dose pumping. Best treatment, cheapest, easiest, and I call that somewhat passive. So, but you should know your sources, because how many know that wastewater is a source of phosphorus? Everybody knows it. What about leaf litter? You ever think of leaves? One study showing how leaves themselves are a source of phosphorus. So, you have a nice little compost area in your house, you put it right down in a certain area. Think about it. Grass clippings, everything you put in that compost, the closer that is to the water where it mineralizes the phosphorus, it's going right into that water. So think about where you situate your composting, where you rake your leaves to. I've seen you guys right off the dock into the water. Because when you're blowing offshore, you say, hey, best place to send it, offshore. That's phosphorus. You're adding phosphorus. You might as well give that whole thing a big hamburger for food because you just gave it phosphorus. I'm sorry. Okay, now I want to talk about contaminants and emerging concern. First of all, what are they? For all the drugs we take, because what you take into your body is a drug. I took a thyroid pill every day. I think either that or you would hear me talk real slow running about that. And 80% of what I ingested this morning, I left in the toilet in there. That yellow liquid, because it just went right through. It is a process. Most of what you take into your body is not really used by your body. It's just in a big enough pill that some of it gets used by the way, by the time it passes out of your body. So, when you think about contaminants and emerging concern, think about the drugs we take, think about fragrances, think about the DEET you put on to keep the ticks off, think about all that stuff, because when that gets into the wastewater, that can do some serious things. And This is something you say, oh my gosh, you should have reached it. I can't even breathe anymore without hurting your thumb. Well, you're right, you can't. But there are some things you can do to prevent things like that. It's right up there at the highest level of wastewater treatment. It's very difficult to do it. But again, what we find in our research, soils-based systems, drip dispersal, shower down drain fields, provide the best removal of a number of pharmaceuticals. So, big deal. Why should we care? My mother said, give me two good reasons. She never wanted just one, because she knew the first one was just going to be bull anyhow. So, one person's wastewater is another medication. 30 to 90% of what you send out that white porcelain bowl is undigested, whatever you took. If you're on hormone therapy, if thyroid medicine, if you're on anything, you take acetaminophen, if you take naproxen, anything like that, 90% of it's going to be excreted. And you say, so what? Well, this happens. It gets into your river, lake stream, gets into your drinking water. Now, for the most part, you couldn't drink enough at those concentrations. You'd have to eat, like, or drink so much water you'd never get a therapeutic dose. But over the long term, we don't know. For instance, that guy down there, swimming in the water with endocrine disruption, he's only 15 years old. Now, you're saying you're right. Okay, so, oh, I just screwed up something. Now we're good. Okay, sorry about that. So, humans may not get a good dose, but at very low concentrations, these guys do. Very low concentrations, and say, okay, George, how low is wrong? Why do we care? Anytime you affect any one of those on the food web that just happens to be Lake Michigan, there was a Lake Champlain one just like this, but I just didn't have it for the doctors the last time I did was Michigan. Anytime you affect one of those, you affect all the ones above it. And here's the case in point. Now, I want you to imagine that you're coming up on a railway crossing. And the bell's going off, ding, 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 and you make this decision, do I go for it, do I go for it? But then you run the 6 o'clock news from 2 months ago and saw that crash and said, now I'll wait. So you stop at the crossing and you watch 10 miles worth of tankers carrying water going by. 10 miles! In Canada, the equivalent of 9 drops of an artificial estrogen and at the very birth control pill, 9 drops collapse a fish population in one of their lakes. That's sobering. 9 drops in 10 miles worth of water in, can affect a fish population. And you say, big deal? You collapse the fathead minnow population? So do you care about fathead minnows? Well, you don't, but the walleye you don't care about do. And the pike you like to catch, and the perch you like to catch, and the rest of the food chain up the chain does. And the reason is, because you really can't fool Mother Nature. Some of those compounds lock in your estrogen receptors. For anyone in this room, and yes, guys, we do have estrogen receptors. I know what you're thinking, well, I don't know the fact that it told me that I have a population. No, it affects you too. Locks in, and our bodies, what you see in the mirror every morning, is affected by very subtle biological changes where a hormone locks into a receptor site and says to your body, shut down any more production here. But if something else locks in there and doesn't send a signal, the estrogen runs wild. And we found out from a number of sources, primarily fisheries biologists, by the way, of which I am one, fisheries biologists, that estrogen mimicking compounds in the environment stop reproduction of fishes. Now, if you don't care about fishes is a proper term for many species of fish, then you don't care. But it doesn't take much to do it. So, I'm going to close out here with a because I would do the 10 most things you can do for protecting your ponds and lakes when you live right beside them. One, design shallow systems. They treat better. They gotta be bigger if you have to use the native soils, because you have to go on a percolation rate or a soil test or sieve analysis. But if you can design that in those surface layers, you are partaking of nature's bounty, because nature can do that much better than any instrument can, any machine can. Design maximum distance to groundwater. If you do that, and you look, you find the highest spot to do it. Even if you've got 10 feet to groundwater, if you can find a better spot, you're doing a better job treating, because it's that oxic zone or that aerobic zone beneath the septic system that does the majority of the work. High dose, low pressure treats better. I can't say it any better. That's, the least number of words. And C.S. Lewis says, part of it is the advantage of learning language. So that line right there says it all. Design loading rate is key. If you design a system just for your four bedrooms, for whatever that challenge is, yeah, you'll be fine, because you're probably only going to see half that anyhow. But it's all about design loading rate. Avoid overuse of antibacterial products. I don't know why we do it, but triclosan or triclosan, whatever you want to call it, first of all, it's not good, and it imparts antibacterial resistance, antimicrobial resistance on the environment. But remember, your septic system, every piece of it, is a biological reactor, primarily working on bacteria. Triclosan and some of the other antimicrobials, they're antimicrobial. So you don't want to overdo this. You have to, because you're immune suppressed. God bless you. You gotta do it. But soap works just as good. Move those bugs off your hand into your waste stream, and that's fine. Because that's where they're all gonna be happy down there. The ones that can't make it are gonna get eaten. And the ones that can are gonna process your wastewater. Don't flush unused medications. Big one here, folks, because, nine drops, 10 miles of railway cars. Keep that in mind, 9 nanograms stopped a fish population in there. By the way, that was purposeful. And if there wasn't a Canadian in the room, I'd say the Canadians are crazy for even trying it. Oh, I did say that. I'm sorry. Don't excessively use disinfectants, particularly you got a processing unit. Stop using all quaternary or ammonia to a large extent. Normal bleach. You know, you're going to use it, of course you're going to use it. You got to clean things. Just don't go over crazy. We all need this natural immunity, which is why I eat at one of the restaurants in town, just to maintain my immunity. I know I'm going to get some bugs from that. Not really. I'm a health inspector. I don't do that. Maintain your system regularly. Pump it out. Pumping out will do more for the phosphorus than it will do the nitrogen, because the nitrogen going in is pretty much equal to the nitrogen coming out. And the bugs going in, you have a good residence time, they're going to be reduced by about 2 logs or 90%, which isn't a whole lot, since the effective dose of the virus is 1. Keep traffic off your soil treatment area. Watch the traffic. Everything in the soil depends on air. Every treatment aspect in the soil depends on air, either the abundant presence of it or the slight absence of it. You compact the soil, you are definitely ruining the air passage in that system. So you think, it's a party, just park your car, it's only air for me. It's only one day, and it's a little damp out, or you just had a rainstorm a couple days ago. You just probably cut the life of your system by 20%. Okay, I exaggerated. It's hyperbole. I keep trying to explain what that is to my grandkids, but they don't understand either. Practice water conservation, check all the fixtures. I will tell you that the majority of times I see people overloading the system and it's ground trout in the backyard, it's because they have not checked the toilet. They'll swear the toilet is running, they'll pop the cover off, anybody in the house know, and there's water running. And they go, that can't happen. Well, I didn't make it. I'm not a miracle maker here. There's water coming in, it's coming from somewhere. Check all your fixtures. So, I think I'm in turn. That's it, my story. I'm sticking to it. Thank you very much for your time. Oh, yes.
I have a question. If you had a choice, George, to send effluent to a sewage treatment plant about 10 or 12 miles away, or to a community-based septic field mound system, where would you be leaning?
Okay, if I had a choice, send it 10 miles away to a worn pipe where gas is collected and things die, versus a shorter run to a collective system, maybe 60 to 100 homes. I'd definitely go for the 60 to 100 homes, because I have one basic philosophy. The closer you keep the crap to where it is being made, the more the people who make it will take care of not dumping stuff in that will kill the system that then will come back on them. It's a pretty simple principle. We're all human, can we talk? Of course. If in your backyard, dumping one thing in that septic tank would blow it up, would you do it? If the risk was, say, 1 out of 100? No, you wouldn't do it for 1 out of 100, but if it's sewage treatment plant, you might say, yeah, let's care of that paint then. Yes?
I think they're
great. I think that, the question was about constructive wetlands, and since soils do it so well, what about constructive wetlands? Again, nature can do just about anything. We can, if we hand it at the right rate and the right pace. Problem with constructive wetlands, and it's a problem in this climate, is in the cold, they're gonna shut down. So depending on what you need to get rid of, for instance, if it's nitrogen, anything below 5 degrees, and you'll experience 5 degrees outside our constructive wetlands, you'll shut down the nitrification, denitrification cycle. If you're just trying to get rid of pathogens, then you might have to be a little bit more careful where you discharge, because viruses love the cold. They love it. I mean, because they're saying, hey, I don't have any energy requirement anyhow, but when it's colder, I don't have bugs that are looking for carbon and scraping my outside coat and everything like that. So constructive wetlands are great. You just need to know when you're designing it and what you're designing it for. And you can overcome most of the design limitations in cold weather with sizing. If you have enough size and enough thermal mass, that might compensate for some of the throughput numbers. But if you design something for 200 gallons a day, and in the winter it receives the same 200 gallons a day it did in the summer, you're going to suffer some performance. Because bugs, not like us, bugs will work harder when it's warmer, and when it's cold, they slow down. So what will happen? Organics will accumulate. Organics accumulate, shuts the air off, then you'll get the bugs that create slime, or exogenous polysaccharides, or exogenous polymeric substances. That's the black goop or black mayonnaise. They'll produce more in the winter. So you just have to figure for your design. I always say, you can design sewage to get rid of it on any lot. Depends on just think about what nature can do. Think about how you have to supplement it with some mechanical action, if you do it all, and then do it right. And then monitor to make sure you get it right. Because really, can we talk in nature? I mean, these bugs, we're all guessing. Everybody thinks these cycles are all understood. No, you start looking at animals, and then you look at the real book, and you say, well, that's what the book says, and then you see what happens in real nature after experiencing. And I would say, by the way, for the person who said, walk out in nature so you can, you know, rejuvenate yourself, walk to a wastewater treatment plant. It's the same thing. Not really. Yeah.
Is there anything that's advisable to add to the septic tank?
Yes, poop. You should always add poop to your septic tank. And a little urine and a little water. Because I always hear this, you know, baker's yeast, get some baker's yeast stored in there. I say, yes, absolutely, but make bread with it first and eat it. Because we've not seen anything. You know, some of these super bugs that break things down. And you see the septic tank has got all this clunk in it. And you add that and it's gone. Guess what? Einstein said, conservation of mass. Where did it go? Went out to your leach field. Either it's a demand on the oxygen up there, because it didn't get the demand in there. You just mineralized it and sent it out there. So you have to be very careful. I have personally, and that's how I will say, it's not hard science, I've personally not seen any additive nor tested any, and we've tested about 15 of them, that has worked in that regard. And if somebody's selling them in here, I'm going to make a hasty retreat. But that's a fact. I've just never seen. The only thing ever rejuvenated leach field is either aggressive application of air or hydrogen peroxide. I wouldn't recommend the second one because at the concentration you need, it would probably dissolve the glue you want in.
All right, well, thank you so much.
Well, I don't know if I read it or not. Can I just add a couple of things out of the model context for George's talk? You were talking about approval of those phosphorus removal technologies. So for systems over 6,500 gallons per day, sorry, large systems, there is requirements for monitoring phosphorus going through groundwater into surface water. For systems under 6,500 gallons per day, so for small-scale domestic systems, the legislature has not asked us to take into account nutrients in our rules. So our rules are focused very much on pathogens and waste strength. So when we approve technologies, I'm looking to see those pre-treatment technologies, those that bring down the waste strength and to remove the pathogens. Now, if we were asked to look at phosphorus removal technologies, I can look at it, make sure it's not going to influence things that we are required to regulate, and potentially can issue a letter of no objection. So individuals would be able to use that. But I just wanted to put that into the Vermont context, that we don't approve them, but we could, at the moment, you know, we could issue a letter of no objection, so individuals could choose to use those. Okay.
So I did promise a quick break. We'll take our 5-minute break, and then we're going to come back around 1:36, and we'll close out the day.